It is day three of the Virginia Film Festival. I'm sitting across from Gordon Quinn, one of the founding directors of Cartemquin Films. Cartemquin Films has been a Chicago-based documentary filmmaking powerhouse for 45 years, and we're showing, I think, 9 of your films, some historical films and some new ones that are coming out. Tell us about some of the films that we're going to be seeing this weekend.
Well, the Inquiring Nuns is already shown, and that's from 1966, literally. It's two real nuns going around on the streets of Chicago asking people if they're happy. It's kind of a homage to Chronicle of a Summer, a very famous documentary at the time. And you couldn't make that film today because nobody would believe that they're real, that they are who they were. They'd think it's Saturday Night Live, or it's, you know, somebody's putting them on, it's Borat, you know.
And this is 1966.
1966.
They're not there with a flip camera. They've got
No. We're 16 camera. Millimeter, right. You know. This is when we were just starting out. But, we, you know, for the first 25 years, it was 16 millimeter. Nothing changed. And now, of course, the technology changes weekly. But we're showing the Taylor Chain films. I think they've already shown. Which were made 10 years apart at the same chain-making factory. The first one features a strike, and the second one actually shows the collective bargaining between the company and the union. We actually got inside the bargaining sessions where they're actually negotiating with each other, the first time it had ever been recorded in an American film. And then, of course, we're showing The Interrupters, which is about to go on. Which is Steve James and Alex Kotlowitz. We have a long history with Steve. We've made a lot of films with Steve James, dating back to Hoop Dreams.
Hoop Dreams, probably the most familiar title to film festival audiences that came out because it was a huge film.
That was the film that and everybody knows this for, and a great film. And, you know, they were two, soon three young guys out of film school, never made a major film before, and they came into Cartemquin with an idea and a title, a great title, and $2,000 from a public agency, the Illinois Arts Council, in funding, which told me they had it together enough to at least write a proposal. We took the project on, and it was a huge success, a very powerful film. And we've gone on to work with Steve on a lot of other projects, and Alex Kotlowitz, who wrote the initial story about The Interrupters, and Steve came together to do this. Zach Piper was the sound man and the producer and associate producer, and I mean, it's the sound in the film is phenomenal. It's just, you know, and I'm not talking sound design. I'm talking about the fact that they got it. They got it. They're right there. You know, everyone's kind of like on mic. And it's just a very powerful film about a subject we think is very important. It's about the ceasefire program in Chicago. Ceasefire has a program called The Interrupters, which is ex-gang leaders, people who have gotten out of prison, who have turned their life around, and they work in this program, they get trained to stop violence before it happens, to interrupt the cycle of violence. So they have credibility in their neighborhoods, people know them, a kid's been shot, the family knows who did it, and the word on the street they hear is like, so-and-so's been shot, we're going to get the guy who did this. And these guys or women will come right into the situation and say, wait, calm down, brother. We got to talk about this. Let's, you know, they try to cool people out before it happens. So on the one hand, it's kind of a desperate thing, shows you how desperate a situation we're in. On the other hand, that's the reality. And it's been very successful. And so they really got it. I mean, it's not the other thing I think that's important about the film, which is, it's not cops, you know, which just shows you a moment of people being arrested, or just shows you somebody shooting at somebody, or, you know, it's not about that. It's about who these people are as complicated human beings. They follow them for over a year. They have, you know, the backstory. They have their families. They have, it's a very emotional film that lets you connect with people who are in these desperate circumstances, but lets you connect with them as complicated human beings. And I think that's, you know, that's very important to us.
I read a review that said this program is trying to treat persistent crime like a disease and diagnose it early and provide early intervention and try to cut it off before it has a chance to grow.
Well, it is. It comes out. It's Gary Slotkin from the School of Public Health who initially thought it up. Tito Hardiman, who came up with the idea for the interrupters and is kind of the head of it. And what they were looking at was this public health model of looking at it as an infectious disease that spreads from person to person. And it's unfortunate that the situation that we have around violence, in urban violence, is that we are so not dealing with the underlying problems that we do have to deal with it as an infectious disease, you know. And controlling it at that point of transmission from person to person, you know, it's there are underlying conditions that also need to be addressed. But in the meantime, we got to deal with this desperate problem that way too many people are getting killed.
I want to talk about the early days of Cartenquin Films and how you got started, how you and your two partners decided to become documentary filmmakers, and did you have how did you start out? How big was your scope, and did you have any concept at the time that 45 years later you'd still be producing such important works?
You know, it was an exciting period. It was the 60s, mm-hmm. You know, and there were three of us, Jerry Temner, Stan Carter, myself. Very within the first year, Jerry Blumenthal joined us, but we weren't going to change the name to Cartemquinthal. We thought Cartemquin, we thought, sounded like Potemkin.
Right.
If anybody ever has a chance to name an organization, don't do what we did, because it's been a pain in the ass over the years. At our 45th anniversary, they showed like a comic tape of people mispronouncing it, not being able to say it, you know, all the cockamamie stuff that's happened with that name over the years. But we were very influenced and excited by the things that Ricky Leacock, the Maisels brothers, you know, Penny Baker, the Drew Associates, all of those early Verite documentaries were just electrifying to us. And if you look at our early work, you'll see it has a very Verite quality. We felt that if you could just hold a mirror up to society. I'm actually from Virginia, and I went to school. I went to legally segregated schools in Arlington.
I did not know that. I assumed you were from Chicago.
Yeah. No, Steve James and I both are from Virginia. Steve is from Hampton. And, you know, I had been started getting involved in civil rights even in high school, mm-hmm. and sort of had this kind of a little bit of a moralistic view that if you just held a mirror up to society, that would be enough. If people could see how they were acting, that would lead to social change. And so our early films are very purist in that way. And, you know, our first film was in an old age home. We thought it would start a national conversation about how we treat the elderly in America. It really was the film was very successful, but it was primarily used to make old age homes better, you know, to be better institutions rather than to ask the more fundamental questions. And it was the 60s. We evolved into a collective. By 1970, we were already kind of forming. And for about 10 years, that was kind of who we were. We were reading, you know, political books and having meetings constantly about who we were. We were involved. Half the group were teachers and union organizers and people coming from those kind of settings, and the other half of the group were people with media or film backgrounds. And we were trying to change the world, you know. That's what we were about in that period. And you can see our films changing. They become analytic. Some of them have polemical narration, which I still stand behind. You know, I think they're very effective films and powerful films. And then at the end of the 70s, that sort of dissipated. And we sort of struggled along for a few years, and now we've kind of reinvented ourselves again as a more traditional not-for-profit. We have a board. I've stepped down as executive director, and Justine Nagin, who's, you know, in her early 30s, has taken over. And we work with a lot of, our model now is we work with a group of filmmakers. We're trying to develop younger filmmakers to tell the more powerful kind of story that, like you saw in Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams really changed our thinking about what our niche should be. In the 70s, we were working mostly with organizations that were directly engaged in trying to do social change. I think what we saw with Hoop Dreams is we have a particular skill and ability to make very emotional films that can draw people in on an emotional level and maybe change the minds of people who aren't sympathetic to what you're talking about. You know, a lot of people saw Hoop Dreams who would never watch a film about, quote, inner city families. You know, they spent 3 hours with those families. They came to care about them. And that, I think there's room for a lot of different kinds of media. We see that as something that is one of our priorities, trying to make those films that kind of, you know, will get people to see something that they maybe didn't expect to see or connect with someone that they didn't necessarily connect with.
You keep bringing up Hoop Dreams. I'm burning to ask this question. This is definitely going to be a sidebar. But were you familiar with this film that screened yesterday here at the Virginia Film Festival called Elevate?
I didn't see it, no. I wasn't here yesterday. I got here late. Actually got here late last night. I came on the train from Baltimore because we were showing a couple of films at the International Society for Traumatic Stress Disorders. Mm. I may have something like that, close to that, you know. But we're very interested in those kinds of conferences. We like to get our films. We do a lot of outreach and engagement with our films, so we like to get our films to people who are going to use them in all kinds of different settings where they're working around social change.
Elevate is a film about Senegalese basketball players.
Oh, I've heard of this film.
Who came to the United States.
Yeah.
And we follow four players and the cultural adjustments that they have to make being here. The filmmakers did an excellent job of telling a perfect story. It starts out with them in Senegal. We get introduced to our characters. We see them as they get selected to the United States. They get sent to different areas. We follow them over a couple of years, and then they all come back together to play a basketball game together. The narrative practically wrote itself, and I kept thinking of Hoop Dreams because a lot of the young men. And they, you know, they're predominantly African American men that they're playing with here in the United States. It could be some of the same people who were in
the same,
dreams,
the same kids with that dream,
ago, following the same dreams. And it was interesting to see these young men from Senegal pursuing essentially the same dream, but their goal was to make enough money to go back home and support their families and help other people. I recommend you check it out.
I will look for it. Yeah. No, we. Steve and I did a major project several years ago, a 7-hour public television series called The New Americans, which has run a couple times, and, you know, which deals with that whole question of immigration, people coming to America. And one of the things that was crucial for us was to spend real time with people in their home country before they're the fish out of water, mm-hmm. where you can see them in a culture where they know every nuance of what's going on, and then to see them go through that transition. And so, yeah, no, that's sounds like a great film. I'll be looking for it.
Well, you talked a little bit about how Kartemquin has changed, and I think probably you have changed too, as you've grown over the years. I mean, you used to be you were the director of many of the early films,
director and camera, you know,
and cameraman. You were out there on the street with the camera, yeah. And so now as you're. How are you finding young documentary filmmakers? How are you finding the projects that you support? Are people coming to you? Do you have a pool of people that you draw from?
We have a pool of people that we draw from, but we're always looking for, you know, we work with new filmmakers. In the last few years, we've done, In the Family, Joanna Rudnick, first-time director. We've done a lot of films with first-time directors. Refrigerator Mothers was J.J. Hanley and David Simpson, a film about the mothers of autistic children. J.J. had an autistic, not an autistic child, but somebody somewhere on that spectrum, you know, maybe Asperger's, whatever. But she was meeting these older women with this incredible story. And that was a case where she was a journalist. She had never made a film before. And she got my home. She's kind of a force of nature, you know. She gets my home number, and she's pitching me this idea, and it's like, we're in the middle of the New Americans, you know. I'm like, I can't talk to you. We are so busy, you know. I don't. We couldn't possibly take, and she spins out this story, and I realize I know the story. I went to the University of Chicago. I knew people who worked in the Bettelheim School. I knew one of the characters who winds up being in her film. I mean, I didn't know that at that point, but it was like, I knew everything about it, but I never thought it as a film. I never thought of it as a story. So I brought her together with David Simpson, who was a little more experienced, and we made that film together. So we're very, you know, I'm looking, one of the keys to Kartemquin and what we look for in a project is that somebody has a passion for it. That's, we don't, it's, you know, it's not just another film, another documentary. I want someone who, like, this is the film that they have to make. You know, the woman who did In the Family, she carries that gene, you know. And so that issue was tremendously important to her. She actually produced my new film, A Good Man, that we're here with, about the dancer Bill T. Jones. But it's, you know, we are not people who... Every one of our films looks the same. And historically, when you look at our films over the years, you know, I think it's important what the subject is. I think you have to pay attention to the period of history that you're in, mm-hmm. and be respectful of that and what how the story needs to be told. And we don't just keep, you know, we don't have a formula that we work to, other than it's got to be something that somebody has a passion to tell this story, and it has to be something in the most broad sense that is attempting to, in some way, make our democracy and our society work better. So those are the two kind of, you know, that's pretty broad stuff.
And how do you stick to that after 45 years? I mean, you know, how do you and your partners, your two original partners...
Well, they're long people, gone.
They're long gone.
Still friends. We still keep in touch. But they actually left. Temner and Carter left within the first few years. Temner and I made a whole early series of films, like The Inquiring Nuns that was here. We did that together. And then Jerry Blumenthal and I went on and made a lot of films together, and he was there through the whole collective period. And a film that I did a couple of years ago, he came back to edit, called Prisoner of Her Past, about a childhood Holocaust survivor. And that was the other film. We had The Interrupters and that film at this trauma conference. And it was great to be there with two films so incredibly different. And yet for that conference, they both had a lot of things in common that people were relating to. And a lot of people came, you know, the same people came to both films. They saw one and went to see the other.
Now tell me about coming to the Virginia Film Festival. Who approached who?
You know, I may not know because okay, Jody may have approached... He may have talked to Justine before he talked to me. You know, one of the nice things about not being the executive director anymore is there's a lot of things that surprise me. You know, it's like, oh, we're doing that? You know, okay. And I like that. Yeah, no, but it's a great place for us to be, and we're thrilled to be here. And, of course, we had been in Charlotte with Bill T. Jones working on the film because the short that's being shown with A Good Man, 100 Migrations, was done at the University of Virginia as part of their residency there. And this is the only play. It's going to be shown here. And then when it's broadcast in a week or so, that short, only here in Virginia, is going to be shown with the broadcast. It's going to be on American Masters. So, you know, that this is a great place for us to be, particularly with that film. And it's a great festival. You know, I just saw some local work that I went to see this morning that was very interesting, done by, you know, actually filmmakers based here in Charlottesville.
Yeah, this is a very good creative community. So you just arrived like late last night?
Last night, yeah.
So you haven't had a chance to look around the town yet.
No, I haven't seen much. We saw a little bit. We did eat somewhere on the corner when we were here before, you know. Uh-huh. But I got in late. I found the party, amazingly enough. Mm-hmm. Found the party last night and then got up this morning and went to see some of these locals. Films, but we're thrilled to get this kind of a retrospective too, and to have several of our films here. And I'm really sorry that I missed the screenings of some of those older films because I love showing those films, and I just couldn't. There was no way for me to get here from Baltimore in time.
Yeah. Well, we'll have more chances. We have two more days of festival to go.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoy your stay here, and
well,
thank you for coming by.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot.